John, what's your title right now with DSAB?
My title with the DSAB is Director of Health.
Okay. Now, last week, City Council didn't exactly reject the Heart Hub, but what they did is not exactly a ringing endorsement, especially about the location. So what's next?
Well, what's next is we're still waiting on the results from the Heart Hub application that's been submitted to the Ministry of Health. We continue to work as a group in developing that, and that's the mandate that the city and staff asked us to do. So they had previously expressed the support of the Wellness Center of Excellence and being able to develop a center that brings addictions, mental health treatment under one roof. And we continue to work on that as we await the results from the province. Now, those results were supposed to come between November 15th and December 15th. When they originally announced the Heart Hubs, that's the timeline that they had announced, but from mid-November to mid-December, and we're still awaiting the results of our of the Heart Hub application.
Now, like so many of its of their constituents, councillors have not questioned the need for the Heart Hub, the Center of Excellence. It's the location that everyone is objecting to. What can happen about that?
So, as part of the application for the Heart Hub, we needed a location. And what they're looking for, right in the application, they were asking for all of the facilities or all of the services to be located under one roof. And currently in Timmins, we didn't have those facilities. But when we were developing the Wellness Center of Excellence, and this Wellness Center of Excellence was work that had been going on and that had been previously submitted years before, had been further developed throughout the year last year, and we presented that at AMO with the mayor representing the city that we had a need in the community. And at the same time is when Minister Jones announced the wellness or the Heart Hub application. So we were already in the process of proposing a common site, which from the DSAB and the contribution that the DSAB brings forward is their expertise in property management and property acquisition and development. And we had the opportunity to purchase 1800 Riverside Drive. And so we did do that, especially when the Heart Hubs were announced in August. This moved the timeline forward even more and the urgency in having a facility to be able to demonstrate to the province that we can do this all under one roof. Now, the facility offers all kinds of great features that tick off a lot of boxes for our agencies. We're able to secure the building. There's a courtyard. There's already a kitchen. There's 100 rooms there. It comes all furnished. There was all kinds of things that four partners really met some of the demands that we had for a wellness center.
Yet the location is still a big obstacle.
Well, so the issues with the location or the neighboring communities or people around the neighborhood that are bringing up, we're trying to address any of their concerns. Yes, there was no consultation involved at the beginning as to the where we would locate the wellness center. This was, again, an opportunity that came up. At the time, there was no other property in the area that would offer. We did an environmental scan, just looked around, see what else is for sale, what is available. And we had no other opportunities to buy any properties or to develop another property. Having said that, we are willing and want to work with the neighbors. We want to work with the people in the area and in the community to make sure that this is successful. And that's been one of the challenges moving forward, is being able to have safe, open conversations to hear people's concerns as we're developing the sites. And we have heard them. I mean, we did have the session on September 9th. It was well attended, didn't necessarily roll out the way that we were hoping. I mean, we started our opening session and it started with people yelling at the presenters. And you were there in the room when we did present, and to try and get messaging across was difficult. We recognize that, but we also recognize the importance of people being able to be in a safe environment and being able to have dialogue and hear their concerns, but also an opportunity to express how we might be able to address their concerns. we're committed to doing that. It's part of our communication plan as we develop this. Once we hear if the funding has been approved, we will ensure to engage the public again in some consultation. They will be in better organized sessions. They'll be smaller. It'll be in a safe environment where people will be able to have conversations, where they'll be able to express what is happening and their concerns. And also we're looking for that engagement because that's how innovation happens. You hear other people's opinion. You hear how they think maybe treatment would help. But we have done consultations in the in-between. We've met with a dozen local businesses that are neighboring the property. We've also met with the schools in the area. We've heard their concerns. We've expressed what is going to be there, what the center is not going to be. And we've opened those lines of communication and dialogue with those partners.
It must be frustrating at times, though, because as I noticed and experienced that night back in September, those people are very set in their objections, and it would not be easy to overcome them.
So very good point, Bob, and thanks for bringing that up. And you're right, it is difficult, but it doesn't mean they don't have a voice. And we should listen to what they have to say, because what they're saying might be what their neighbor is also thinking, but they don't have, they're not in a position to say it, or they don't feel comfortable bringing it up. So it is important to be able to voice that, but it's to be able to do it in a safe and secure environment for those who may want to share their voice, but they certainly don't want to do it if they're going to be in a confrontation or that type. And when we were in the sessions and people were coming to us, there was absolutely no confrontation from our side. We listened to what people were saying. We took some of that information away. But we want to make sure that people can also share their support. And the voices that have been predominant, and I feel bad for our city councilors who are put in a position who have to listen to all of the dissenting voices, which have been very loud. And yet the people who do support it or have a supportive voice or have questions have not necessarily had the opportunity to be able to voice that or to feel comfortable to bring that forward. So when we have counselors that are supporting the development of a wellness center, they're acknowledging that there's a need for treatment, and it's an urgent need. I mean, Timmins is now second overall across the province for opiate deaths. That's a serious concern. And they realize that, but then they're hearing from their constituents that they don't support it. But has there really been an opportunity for those who do support it? And I would encourage that if you have one side or the other, that you try and express and take advantage of the opportunity to be able to do that.
I think the number one concern, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what might sway some people over to the pro side from the con side is assurances that there would be adequate security.
Yeah, so a really good point. And yes, we absolutely had discussions around security. We've had discussions around security with the neighbors, and they brought up the same points. What we're proposing at the site, in and if we get the funding, is a robust security system, first off. And we want to make sure that the people that are attending the facility feel safe, and also the people who are outside of the facility feel safe. We've already identified areas where we need to add some extra lighting, that we will have a robust security system when it comes to cameras that can monitor the coming and going. We've also been consulting with other facilities that provide supportive housing and what they've done for security. And they've done things like having people on site 24 hours. We will absolutely have people on site 24 hours. We will have professionals on site 24 hours. So counselors, physicians, nurse practitioners. We're looking at mental health and addiction workers, social workers. They won't all be there at the same time, but there will be professional staff on site to be able to provide supports. Hence supportive housing in that facility. But also we're looking at technology and how we can improve that so that we know the person going into the facility is who they are and where they are in the facility. And some of that is through cameras, through facial recognition, making sure that there's a clear line of communication with that client. But we're also looking at making sure that the people on the outside or the neighbors have access to the facility if they need to provide feedback. Now, we've been very clear that this there's not going to be any drug use on site, and it's going to be a sober facility. So if neighbors are starting to see an increase in syringes around the neighborhood or drug paraphernalia or those types of things, we want to make sure that they have a line of communication to the facility, because we're going to be wondering who is using, because they're not supposed to be using, right? And so together as a community and as a neighborhood, we'll be able to address those types of concerns. There was also the concern about traffic and the increased traffic in the area. And we have looked at that. There's actually one of the businesses who offered to do a risk analysis due to the truck traffic that is in the area. Of course, from a mining town, we know there's a lot of truck traffic, and they're willing to do that. And if we get the approval for this funding, we're going to take them up on their offer to look at the truck traffic and look at the traffic lights and what the potential impact is. But the good part of the neighborhood is when they updated the sidewalks recently, over the last couple of years, there's now clear access. They don't have to walk on the highway. They can use the sidewalks. There's a bus station or a bus pickup right at the facility. So there's a few things that definitely add to that. But the important part is opening the lines of communication with the neighborhood, with the people in the area, so that we can address security concerns immediately.
Okay, now, being through DSAB, I assume, and I might have heard, but just to confirm it, the people who use this facility will be from right across the district, right?
So another good question, and people that are going to use this facility are not just from the District of Cochrane, they're also from the District of Temiskaming. So a lot of the partner agencies like Canadian Mental Health, Cochrane Temiskaming, CTRC, Cochrane Temiskaming Resource Center, right? Like they're NeoFax, they also service Cochrane and Temiskaming. So we partnered with Temiskaming District as a DSAB, so they also have a DSAB, to make sure that we've got, one, it made sense to bring partners together. One, it gave us a better chance in the application. We're now talking about 135,000 population being served compared to potentially 85,000 being served in the Cochrane District. And if we would have applied for, there's only so many heart hubs. They're talking about only 18 of them. So when you apply for something like this, you weigh the advantages, disadvantages, and what can we do to make sure we increase our chances of potentially getting the funding for this? And a clear one was partnering with Temiskaming DSAB. In discussions with them, they were also considering putting in an application, but realizing that they're a small district, the chances of them getting one of the 18 sites in Ontario would have been pretty small. But now partnering with Cochrane District and building the relationships with the services that they have in the area, I think we can better serve everybody in the area. And it also includes all the way up the James Bay coast. And hence why Meshkegawak is one of our partners. We're also meeting with Constance Lake First Nations, Tikwatagamu, who they have land-based services, but want to partner to be able to support on the housing piece and the supportive housing piece, so that once somebody goes through land-based services after their stint there, after the 28 days or the time it would take, that they would have a place to go for ongoing care, which is currently not available in our area.
Is there anything you want to add to any of this?
So what I would add is we've got a great group of partners at the table. When we talk about the 40 agencies, there's different levels of partnerships. There's partners that were actively involved in writing the proposal, in developing it, that are going to be on site. And that's about, I'd say about 10 partners that are actively working, and even down to six. But when we talk about all of the other partnerships, we're talking about addiction centers that already exist. We're talking about dealing with gender-based violence and some of the supportive housing that they need. We're talking about youth housing that is seriously lacking. We're talking about people with dual diagnosis who CTRC is treating, who are their clients, who are also lacking supportive housing. What this does is that it brings all of the services together to be able to really try and address what the issues are, which is supportive housing, addictions, mental health treatment, and being able to coordinate that in a client-centered approach, while of course being culturally sensitive to the demographics of the people in our area. So we've been asked to put that together, and all of these agencies are professionals. These are professional agencies that are already delivering their service. And in our proposal, what we did is evidence-based. We're not coming up with fly-by-night concepts. These are concepts that have been proven, that are demonstrated, and we have the data in our proposal. And of course, the ministry was looking for that. We put the data in our proposal to be able to demonstrate this is what's needed, these are the programs we want to develop, and this is how it was proved that these programs work. Now, do people want to support this? Yes, no, there could be either side, but let's make that decision in an evidence-based manner. If we're willing to have the conversations and you're on one side of the fence and I'm on the other side of the fence, let's have that discussion. I'll provide you the information as we develop it. But also, let's be open-minded as a community in order to be able to hear what the other one has to say. And somewhere in the middle, we could make and will make something great. Now, if we can all imagine and come to that concept, that what would it take for this to be a great thing or for it to be wonderful? I think that the whole community is going to benefit as well as the region. And the last thing I'll leave you off with is we have to remember that there are thousands of employees in all of these agencies that are working to serve our clients, that are working to address homelessness, addictions, mental health. And what we're stuck with is the funding that we currently have. And the funding will, with the Heart Hub, induce additional resources that we can bring to light and we can bring to fruition. But I don't want us to forget about the thousands of people that are working for us, that when there's dissension in the community or when we're talking about agencies not doing their job or we're questioning how we're doing it, we're also questioning the great work that all of these agencies are doing and trying to serve the most marginalized people. So we can't forget about the great work that all these agencies are doing and trying to solve these communal issues.